And a good afternoon to you all on a beautiful Sabbath day out there. Welcome to our visitors. We're certainly glad that you've been able to join us. We welcome those who are joining us on the webcast as well. It probably comes as no surprise to you that there are some really strange beliefs out there in the world about the law and the commandments of God. Here's one. Jesus did away with the law, even though he said, "Do not think that I've come to destroy the law or the prophets. I did not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Assuredly, I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, one jot or one tittle will by no means pass from the law till all is fulfilled." Here's another one of those weird ideas. The Apostle Paul expressed hostility to the law in his writings, and he taught that the law is done away. Even though, in presenting his defense before Felix in Acts 24, he said this, "But this I confess to you, according to the way which they call a sect, so I worship the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written in the law and the prophets." And that's also despite what he said in Romans 7 and verse 12, where he wrote, "Therefore the law is holy, and the commandment holy and just and good." Here's one more of those weird ideas. The law didn't exist before it was given on Mount Sinai, and God just put those laws together for the nation of Israel, or as they would say these days, for the Jews. And that's really going to be the spring point that we're going to use to examine the rest of this message. We know that God gave the Ten Commandments to the people of Israel from Mount Sinai, and it was about 2 months after Moses had led them out of Egypt. And that's recorded in Exodus chapter 20, as we're very familiar with. But was this the first time that God's laws were given to human beings? Were the Ten Commandments unknown until Sinai? Or were those commandments given to people long before Moses' time? What does the Bible say? There are two preliminary points before we really dig into the meat of the message, but the preliminary points help signal the answer to the question of whether God's laws existed before they were given on Mount Sinai. First, a strong hint is found in a statement God made about Abraham, and it's recorded in Genesis 26 and verse 5. So if you'll turn with me to Genesis 26 and verse 5, and if you're into markers in your Bible, we're going to spend a lot of time in the book of Genesis today, so we'll bounce around within the book of Genesis, but you might wish to make it easy to find. Genesis 26 and verse 5. God says, "Because Abraham obeyed my voice and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." Now, what's significant about this is that Abraham was born hundreds of years before Moses received the law and the nation of Israel received the law on Mount Sinai. In order for Abraham to obey God's commandments and his statutes and his laws, he had to know what they are. This indicates that Abraham had to have been taught the laws of God, either by God directly, by other people, or maybe a combination of the two. Here's the second preliminary reason that gives us the ability to infer that the commandments existed before Moses and Mount Sinai. Because the Bible refers to sin many times before Moses. I'm going to give you what's referred to as a string citation. Lawyers who write stuff are frequently accused of giving string citations where you just got citations that run on forever. We're not going to go to these right now, but if you're interested and wish to put them in your notes, Genesis chapter 4, verse 7, chapter 13, verse 13, chapter 18, verse 20, chapter 39, verse 9, chapter 42, verse 22, and chapter 50, verse 17. So it's referring to sin even before we get to the book of Exodus. But what is sin? Well, we know that the Bible defines sin very simply. Sin is the transgression of the law. Now, that's the King James Version. The New King James and many other modern versions say sin is lawlessness. Now, if sin is defined as transgressing or breaking or running roughshod over the law, then law has to exist before there can be sin. Paul wrote, "Where there is no law, there is no transgression." That's in Romans 4, verse 15. The point is, you can't transgress the law without there being a law to transgress. So all of those individuals in that string citation from the book of Genesis, where God says they sinned, they broke the law hundreds of years before it was thundered by God from Mount Sinai. Now here's a bonus point to tack on at the end of that. The Bible also refers to angelic beings sinning even before man was created. If you wish to put this in your notes, it's Ezekiel 28, verses 12 through 16, and 2 Peter 2, 4. The thing we need to remember is God did not give Moses and the nation of Israel a brand new law on Mount Sinai. He gave a codified or a formal version of his law so that it could be used to govern the emerging nation of Israel. But we don't need to just infer that, because the Bible, as we will see, gives direct evidence that each of the Ten Commandments was understood by mankind long before they were spoken by God from Mount Sinai in Exodus 20. So let's launch into this. Now, for the sake of time, since this is a split sermon format, we're not going to actually go to Exodus chapter 20 every time I need to deal with a commandment. It just would take too much time, so I'll read them to you. We're going to start by looking at the first and the second commandments. And those are in Exodus 20, verses 3 through 5. Those commandments state, "You shall have no other gods before me," spoken by the one true God, "and you shall not make for yourselves a carved image. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them." Now, God worked with the patriarch Jacob hundreds of years before Moses. After God spoke to Jacob, we're going to notice what he did with the idols that were among his household. Genesis chapter 35, we'll read verses 1 through 4. Chapter 35, verses 1 through 4. "Then God said to Jacob, 'Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there, and make an altar there to God who appeared to you when you fled from the face of Esau, your brother.' And Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, 'Put away the foreign gods that are among you. Purify yourselves and change your garments. Let us arise, go up to Bethel, and I will make an altar there to God who answered me in the day of my distress and has been with me in the way which I have gone.' So they gave Jacob all the foreign gods which were in their hands and the earrings which were in their ears, and Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree which was by Shechem." So Jacob understood that the idols among his extended household were sinful, and the only true God was to be worshipped. He understood the first and second commandments even before they were given to Moses and the people of Israel on Mount Sinai. So we've covered number one and number two. Let's go to the third commandment. This is in Exodus 20, verse 7. "You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain." You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Now, most scholars believe that the patriarch Job lived before Moses, perhaps during what's referred to as the patriarchal period, around the time of Abraham and Isaac. Job, as we'll see, was concerned that his children might have been taking God's name in vain, and he knew that was wrong. Let's go to Job chapter 1, verses 4 through 5. Job 1, verses 4 through 5. And his sons would go and feast in their houses, each on his own appointed day, and would send and invite their three sisters to eat and drink with them. So it was, when the days of feasting had run their course, that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings, according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did regularly. Job was well aware that they might have been taking God's name in vain. The complete Jewish Bible, instead of saying that they might have cursed God, says they may have blasphemed God. So that's another sense of the actual Hebrew. That in their, even in their hearts, Job was concerned about it because he recognized that that was a sin. So once again, we're seeing evidence that one of the Ten Commandments was clearly understood by people even before it was given at Mount Sinai. Now we're up to commandment number four, the fourth commandment, Exodus 20 and verse 8. The fourth commandment tells us to remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. Embedded in that command is the truth that the Sabbath existed long before it was, the commandment was given to Moses. You can only remember something that already existed. It wouldn't make sense otherwise. How can you remember something that you've never heard of before? To remember the Sabbath is to recall something that was established earlier. As we're very familiar, the Sabbath goes all the way back to the very early chapters of the book of Genesis, shortly after man was created. So let's go back to the book of Genesis, and we'll read Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3. Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3. "And on the seventh day, God ended his work which he had done, and he rested on the seventh day from all his works which he had done. Then God blessed the seventh day and sanctified it." But otherwise, he set it apart. He made it special because in it he rested from all his works which God had created and made. So there we have, right after man was created on the sixth day, on the seventh day, the Sabbath is established. So it existed how many centuries? Maybe even millennia before Moses. In Exodus chapter 16, the Israelites were reminded to remember the Sabbath several weeks before they got to Mount Sinai. They were still wandering, having crossed the Red Sea and making their way toward Mount Sinai, but they weren't there yet. So let's go to Exodus chapter 16. We'll read verses 23 through 28. This is the point where God is giving manna. But as you'll recall, the gift of manna was intimately tied in with the Sabbath. Exodus 16, beginning in verse 23. "Then he said to them," this is Moses, "this is what the Lord has said. Tomorrow is a Sabbath day, a holy Sabbath to the Lord. Bake what you will today." Remember, they were to gather daily the manna that was coming, but to gather double on the Sabbath or on Friday, so that on the seventh day they wouldn't have to gather. "Bake what you will bake today, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that remains to be kept until morning." So they laid it up till morning, as Moses commanded, and it did not stink, nor were there any worms in it. Unlike what happened earlier in the chapter, where people were told, gather just what you can eat for the day and don't leave it so that it stays overnight, because it did stink and it bred worms. Here, moving from the sixth day to the seventh day, that was not a problem. Then Moses said, "Eat that today, for today is a Sabbath to the Lord. Today you will not find it in the field. 6 days shall you gather it, but on the seventh day, the Sabbath, there will be none." Now it happened that some of the people went out on the seventh day to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws?" Remember, he hadn't given them yet on Mount Sinai because they hadn't made it to Mount Sinai. But God says, you people are breaking my commandments and my laws. See, for the Lord has given you the Sabbath. It was a gift, and they were abusing it. Therefore, he gives you on the sixth day bread for 2 days. Let every man remain in his place. Let no man go out of his place on the seventh day. So it's clear the Sabbath command was in effect before God thundered the command from Mount Sinai. So the people were certainly expected to rest and remember the Sabbath. Now we're up to commandment number 5. The fifth commandment instructs us to honor your father and mother. And that's in Exodus 20, verse 12. Honor your father and your mother. Now we don't have time to rehearse all of the things that lead up to the statement I'm about to make, but it's Jacob and Esau both had dishonored their parents. There's chapters about that. So we'll take it as a given just because for the sake of time. But eventually, the Bible points out, Jacob finally did obey his father. We're going to go to Genesis chapter 28, verses 6 and 7. Genesis 28, 6 and 7. Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob, Isaac their father, and sent him away to Paddan Aram to take himself a wife from there. And that as he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan." And that Jacob had obeyed his father and his mother and had gone to Paddan Aram. So at this point, Jacob honored his father's and his mother's direction. So he clearly valued the need to honor the parents. We don't have time to review all of the details, but in Genesis chapters 45 through 50, that's Genesis 45 through 50, Joseph, who was the prime minister of Egypt at this point, showed great concern for his father. After his brothers had come to buy grain, and Joseph eventually revealed himself on their second trip to buy grain, he revealed his identity to his brothers. Joseph arranged to bring his father from Canaan to Egypt. Joseph sent plentiful provisions to make it easy for his father to make the trip and to have plenty of food. And he provided for him for the journey. Once his father arrived, Joseph introduced him to the Pharaoh. And the Pharaoh was quite impressed with Joseph's ability, and therefore he was also very happy to have Joseph's father there. And he gave them land in the choicest part of Egypt for them to settle. While his father was in Egypt, Joseph continued to provide and care for his material needs. He even left Egypt to take his father's body back and bury his father in Canaan, honoring his father's last request. So Joseph clearly knew the importance of honoring his father. In those chapters, chapters 45 through 50, there are 16 references specifically to Joseph doing acts of honor to his father. Clearly, he understood the importance of the fifth commandment to honor your father and your mother. As a footnote, Joseph's mother had died earlier, so his father was the only remaining parent. So that's why, at this point, the mother is omitted. She had been dead. Rachel had died and had been buried in Canaan. So we're up now. If you're keeping count, number 6, commandment number 6. The sixth commandment instructs us, you shall not murder. You shall not murder. That's Exodus 20 and verse 13. And we can see all the way back to the very early chapters of Genesis. When Cain was angry that God didn't respect his offering, God told Cain he was to rule over his anger and avoid sin. Let's look at that. Genesis 4, verses 6 and 7. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door." So this is one of those instances from the string cite that I gave you earlier, the early references of the sin. And it's, that is, sin's desire is for you, but you should rule over it. Unfortunately, Cain's anger led to the sin of murder. Verse 8. Now Cain talked with Abel his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel his brother and killed him. First family, early on, the first murder. God cursed Cain for his cold-blooded act, verses 11 through 14. We won't read that. We'll just read it, verse 11, where God says, "So now you were cursed from the earth." And he continues on with the curse. And Cain complains, you're sending me out. People are going to kill me because I was a murderer. But God also forbade others from murdering Cain. Let's read verse 15. And the Lord said to him, that's to Cain, "Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. And the Lord set a mark on Cain, lest anyone finding him should kill him." So God's commandment against murder existed long before it was codified as the sixth commandment at Mount Sinai. Up to number seven, seventh commandment. Tells us you shall not commit adultery. You shall not commit adultery. That's Exodus 20 and verse 14. Now this command was known and understood by the patriarch Joseph hundreds of years before Moses was born. When Joseph was in Egypt working under Potiphar, you'll recall the wife of Potiphar attempted to get Joseph to come sleep with her. And Joseph objected. Let's read his explanation. Genesis 39, verses 7 through 9. Joseph not only didn't do it, but what he said is critical. Genesis 39, 7 through 9. "And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife," that's Potiphar's wife, "cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, 'Lie with me.' But he refused and said to his master's wife, 'Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house. He's committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" It would have been a sin against Potiphar for sure if Joseph had given in. But his concern and the important thing for us is he recognized that committing adultery was sinning against God. He understood the essence of the seventh commandment before it was given at Mount Sinai. Even earlier in the book of Genesis, God had warned Abimelech, the king of Gerar, not to commit adultery with Sarah, who was Abraham's wife. Since we're in the book of Genesis, let's go back to Genesis 20 and we'll read verses 1 through 3. That's 20, verses 1 through 3. "And Abraham journeyed from there to the south and dwelt between Kadesh and Shur and stayed in Gerar. Now Abraham said of Sarah, his wife, 'She is my sister.'" Half-truth. She was a half-sister. "And Abimelech, king of Gerar, sent and took Sarah. But God came to Abimelech in a dream by night and said to him, 'Indeed, you are a dead man because of the woman whom you've taken, because she is a man's wife.'" Now, fortunately, God intervened before the sin was committed, because Abimelech was actually innocent in this. He'd kind of been set up by the half-truth that had been spoken by Abraham. But once again, it shows that God was very, very much involved in having his commandment, "You shall not commit adultery," in place long, long before Mount Sinai. We're up to the eighth commandment, number eight. The eighth commandment instructs us, "You shall not steal." You shall not steal. Exodus 20 and verse 15. Now, Jacob was aware of this commandment when he was discussing his wages with Laban, who became his father-in-law. Let's take a look at that. Genesis 30 and verse 33. They're discussing what wages he's going to get for all the years of service that he was putting in payment, I guess you would say, of the bride price for Rachel. And he got snookered. He got a two-for-one deal. He got Leah as well. So Jacob says, verse 33. "So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come when the subject of my wages come before you." Remember, they'd made a deal, going to divide the flocks, going to separate speckled and spotted sheep and brown goats. And Jacob was going to take the lesser value. Laban was going to keep the more valuable. And Jacob's flocks were growing willy-nilly, overwhelming the growth of Laban's flocks. "So my righteousness will answer for me in time to come when the subject of my wages comes before you. Everyone that is not speckled and spotted among the goats and brown among the lambs will be considered stolen if it's with me." So he was supposed to have the speckled and the spotted and the brown. And he says, "Look, if I've got one that's not like that, consider it stolen." So he was being very honest with Laban. So Jacob was aware that of the commandment about stealing. He understood that. In another situation, recall when Joseph's brothers came to buy grain in Egypt, the time of famine, and he gave them grain, sold it to them, sent them home, but he had a silver cup hidden in one of the grain bags. And when Joseph kind of framed his brothers for stealing this cup, when they came back, they understood the gravity of this charge of theft and how serious an offense stealing was. Still in the book of Genesis, Genesis 44, verses 8 through 9, they have returned, and they're returning not only the money that they had paid for the grain, which was stuck back in their grain sacks, but they were returning this silver cup that had belonged to Joseph, the prime minister. So chapter 44, verses 8 through 9. "Look, we brought back to you from the land of Canaan the money which we found in the mouth of our sacks. How then could we steal silver and gold from your Lord's house? With whomever of your servants it is found, let him die, and we will also be my Lord's slaves." They understood the commandment against stealing, and they knew how serious it was. They were even willing to say, "Look, we didn't steal, but if you found it among one of us, that person deserves to die." It's that serious an offense, and it was part of God's law that existed before Mount Sinai. We're up to number 9 now, the ninth commandment. The ninth commandment tells us, "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." That's Exodus 20, verse 16. "You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor." And we would kind of put that in a colloquial terms that You don't lie. Speak the truth. You don't lie. The first recorded lie in the Bible was told to Eve and to Adam by the serpent in the garden. Let's take a look at that. Genesis 3 and verse 4. Short verse. Let's start in verse 2 to get the context. The serpent is talking to Eve, and he says, "As God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden." Verse 2, "And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat of the trees of the garden, but the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die." That was a blatant lie, outright contradicting God. And the sad thing about lies is they're so easily expressed, but the consequences they carry can be so destructive. In this situation, because they believed the lie, Eve ate, she gave it to Adam, he ate, and they got kicked out of the garden. And God's words came true. Eating of the fruit meant dying, you shall die. And they were cut off from the tree of life, so that they would not have access, once they were kicked out of the garden, they would not have access to the tree of life, that they might eat, partake of that and live forever. So God was true, Satan was a liar. The next chapter we see another blatant lie. Cain killed his brother Abel, and God asked Cain where Abel was. If you killed a man and you hid the body, you pretty well know where he is. Chapter 4 and verse 9. We skipped that when we were in this section before, but skipped it intentionally. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And he says, "I don't know. Am I my brother's keeper?" A blatant lie. Cain surely knew, and he lied. And it was part and parcel of this attitude of rebellion against God. God had warned Cain about sin, once again, hundreds of years before the Ten Commandments were given on Mount Sinai. Job also knew that deceit or lying was a sin against God. Let's go to Job chapter 31. We'll read verses 5 through 6. Job 31, verses 5 through 6. Now, Job is making sort of a defense for himself against some of the accusations that were leveled by his good friends. Verses 5 through 6, "If I have walked with falsehood," in other words, if I've been a liar, "or if my foot has hastened to deceit, let me be weighed on honest scales that God may know my integrity." So he was willing to put himself up and say, look, God can figure out whether I'm lying or not, but he knew that it was wrong. Again, long before Mount Sinai. So the ninth commandment is also shown to have been known by men long before the time came that God gave the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai. Now we're up to number 10. The tenth commandment tells us, "You shall not covet." You shall not covet. Exodus 20, verse 17. And coveting is desiring or lusting after something that isn't ours, that we're not entitled to have. And we see this sin also going all the way back to the Garden of Eden, when Eve saw and desired the fruit of the tree of knowledge and good and evil. We were there earlier, but let's go back to Genesis chapter 3. And we're going to read verse 6. So when the woman saw that the tree was good for food and that it was pleasant for the eyes and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit and ate. And she also gave to her husband with her, and he ate. So a tree desirable to make one wise. The translation, The Voice, puts it this way. She coveted the tree. The Jubilee Bible puts it in this way. It is a tree of covetousness to understand. So it's clearly wrapped up with this idea of wanting something so bad, and you're not entitled to it. It's not yours. You not partake of it. So that sin had horrendous consequences. It cut them off from God. Their disobedience to God got them kicked out of the garden. And just as God said, dying, you shall die. Job also understood that coveting was a sin. We were in Job. Let's go back to Job 31. We'll read verses 9 and 11. Job 31, 9 and 11. Job is speaking. He says, if my heart has been enticed by a woman, or if I've lurked at my neighbor's door, verse 11, for that would be wickedness. Yes, it would be iniquity, deserving of judgment. Wanting, he realized, wanting another woman who's not yours, who's another man's wife, was coveting. And the coveting itself is worthy of judgment. So Job understood that coveting was wrong and would lead to even further sins with additional punishment. So as we summarize and wrap this up, we've seen proof in the Bible that each one of the Ten Commandments was known long before the time of Moses. And when God gave Israel the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, he was just pulling together knowledge that had been already presented to mankind and had disseminated throughout much of mankind and had been passed on, as best we can tell, at least orally up to this point, where God then thunders it from Mount Sinai and gives Moses the Ten Commandments written on stone. So we can say with confidence the Ten Commandments existed before Mount Sinai and before the time of Moses. And we know the commandments are still very important for people today. For God gave his laws for our good. Let's look at Deuteronomy 10, verses 12 through 13. Deuteronomy 10, verses 12 through 13. And Moses is recounting for the nation of Israel before they enter into the promised land all of the things that God had done and had instructed about over their 40 years of wandering. And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways, and to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the commandments of the Lord and his statutes, which I command you today, for your good. Keeping God's law is for our good, which makes it seem difficult to comprehend why people would say God's law is a burden. It's for our good. It's for our benefit. Because these laws are based on God's eternal character of love, and they show us how God expects us to love him and to love fellow man. For one final scripture, let's go to 1 John 5 and verse 3. 1 John 5 and verse 3. For this is the love of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. So I hope this review of the law of God before the time of Moses will be of benefit and solidify in your mind that our God truly is a God who does not change. He is the same today as he was yesterday and will be forever, and his law will stand forever.